to the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast. I'm your host, Michael Whitehouse. Today, we'll be speaking with Connecticut State Representative Joe Dela Cruz. He represents the 41st House District, which includes part of New London and part of Groton. He'll share with us some behind the scenes of what it's like to be hands-on in the democratic process. There's more to it than you may think. So let's dive in with Joe Dela Cruz.
All right, so we're here today with Joe Dela Cruz. He's the representative of the 41st District, which is Groton, part of Groton and part of New London. Joe, introduce yourself to the fine people.
Michael, well, it's good to talk to you, Michael. We know each other well from local politics and a lot of the community things that we've seen each other at. I'm the 41st representative, which means it's four districts here in Groton, voting districts, one voting district in New London, which is down the south end of New London. And I'm the only guy that has to leave his district for about 15 or 20 minutes before he gets back into his district. It's been broken up. It crosses a river, and it's nowhere near the bridge that I have to cross.
You can take a boat.
Yeah, you could. There's not really any docks down there to accept you, though.
Oh, okay.
I was a former RTM member. I know you're a part of the RTM now.
Yeah, I was
on the town council for 3 years, the RTM for 6 years, elected first in 2016 for the 41st district, reelected in 18, and I'm running again right now.
There you go. I think last year won with, 107% of the vote?
What's that?
Last year got about 107% of the vote, I think.
In the election. it was over 60, and I'm really... I think it validates a lot of the work that I'm doing up there, I think. And, you know, obviously there's, I've been around for a long time in this community, and a lot of people know where my intentions really are. So if I don't know an issue, I think they know that I study it, find out and about it and vote the way that most people would in this area.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've been impressed by that you're doing is how much outreach and information, because, misinformation is the other epidemic going on right now.
I agree.
You have in your Facebook Lives. Now, how often are you doing the Facebook Live shows?
Up until 2 days ago, it was this Tuesday was 9 weeks in a row. And we took two mental health days, basically, because it was, we really feel like sharing the information that we do share. The sources I have, it's usually directly from an agency. So, they're as truthful as they possibly can be. And I think it's important to keep putting that out. But we kind of hit a little bit of a wall. My wife and I, the rigors of going through a pandemic, like everyone is, you find yourself really busy. Then all of a sudden you find yourself really kind of knocked out. And I feel rejuvenated after just those 2 days. But so we were, we were at 60 something shows in a row every night from 7 to 7:30.
Yeah, and how many people were you getting watching those?
It's tough because we don't really know. The metrics afterwards will say that, roughly 80 people is kind of like of through plays. But then live while it's going, it looks like, it could be anywhere between 20 and 30 or 35 and then down to 17. So I'm not quite sure. We haven't figured that part out about how Facebook works. But we're getting a lot of engagements and a lot of people we see around town. They're thanking us, and mostly it's for the breaking up the monotony of the day, but also getting some pretty good, solid information.
Yeah, I think that's what's so important is where media is becoming less and less local, except for The Day, which is doing a good job, but it's not, The Day is in print, so it's not personal, it's not a voice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of potential for things like Facebook Live to make things more human and local, but unfortunately, unless you have a name like our local representative who can draw a good audience, then it doesn't necessarily work to really bring people together. So it's really great that you're doing that. And speaking of bringing people together, you also led the scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Which is going on Saturday. So talk a little bit about what you're doing with that and how that got started.
Well, scavenger hunt happened from our Facebook Live. If you guys, I work at Hillary Company, so I am your state representative, but I work full time as a sheet metal worker. And actually, I'm in the office now. So if the guys that I work with are out there listening, they'll tell you that my hands are far too soft to be a sheet metal worker these days. I'm more of a pencil pusher. But the reality is that's where I've worked. My whole career has been in sheet metal. We had a local artist. He wanted a piece of metal that we had. and he said, "Do you want to change these minions for those for this medal?" And the minions in front of Hillary lived on Lambtown Road for a very long time. It's a local excavating company, and we traded. And ever since then, we've had people pulling our parking lot asking why we put them there. We dress them up for all different occasions, and we had a retiree who last year ended up making a baby minion, and we rearranged it out there, so I had to unchain them. This is a propane tank size minion, and basically I wanted to weld a chain to them to lock them so no one could just grab them. And my mother drove by and said, you know, while we were doing our Facebook Live video, said, "Where's the baby minion?" And in my head right away, I said, "I don't know. You tell me where's the baby minion." He was inside. But I said, "You know what? We're going to look for the baby minion on Saturday." Tammy and I came up with this one cryptic riddle that I thought was too difficult. And we put the baby minion out at 9:15. And at 9:03, it was found, because the people that were listening to our show are obviously friends of ours, and they know who we are. And they know, like, some places that are very near and dear to our heart. And they all drove right to, like, the baseball field where, you know, we're proudly, I mean, Joey, you know, my son who passed away was actually taken from us, but he played on that baseball field. We raised $40,000 as a family. You know, we went out, my mom, my wife, and, you know, we did a lot of fundraisers. We raised money for this field and we put lights on it. So it was so easy for people to figure it out. Now it's more challenging because someone who's not us took it over. And she's done an unbelievable job. People don't know Ashley the way they know us. So they don't know the way she quite thinks. I think they're starting to kind of figure some of her little quirks out a little bit. But she's the one that's been behind the real scavenger hunts. The first one was just the baseball field and it was over. This one has become much more involved. In fact, we had the snafu that you know about, that somebody stole three signs out of the middle of the hunt, which basically ended it early. But our community in Groton fashion had a bunch of people step up and say that they'll go stand with the signs to ensure no one steals them. And here we are. I mean, we had 100 folks show up last week. We figured we're based on how many cars there were. So we printed up 61 sheets at each location and there were only 7 left. And then we multiplied by a couple cars. So we were over 100. We don't know how many over. But it's a, you know, I got a note today on my Facebook from a mother thanking us for doing it because she's immunocompromised and she was able to enjoy this like immensely and not leave her car. And in fact, I think I know who it was because I went up to the car to hand him something. They were like, "No, no, no." And that was the first week. And then I went and grabbed it and said, "Take a picture of it." Because, you know, a lot of people say, people are out of hand or they're out of control with this, right? I didn't feel that. I said, you know, either one of those kids has an immunodeficiency or deficiency, or she does. And I don't blame her. And, you know, they've had a great time as a family. So it's nice to do.
Well, and I've absolutely loved it because I've been, you know, basically inside all the time. And to have something where suddenly it's intense because, you know, it's kind of a race. And you're trying to figure something out, and you're out in the world, and you're driving, and just the, you run over to the sign, you snap the picture, you run back to the car, you throw it and drive, and you're like, "All right, let's go, punch it." Yeah, it's really got that fun feel to it.
Yeah, and as we open back up, so we've announced that we're going to do 2 more. This Saturday will be the second to the last one. Because you know, again, summer's coming up, and everyone's going to be busy anyway, and I'm sure a lot of people will continue to do it. But the reality is a lot of the restaurants, you know, and if you notice, part of it is, you know, part to get people out of the house, but also we've ended at restaurants pretty much every time so far. And basically everyone goes in after, and it's not everyone that's buying food, but it's a lot of people. And some of the people had never heard of the restaurant that they went to and they got lunch and they like it and they're going to go back. So it's a all encompassing event. It's bringing community together. We had the mayor. This is a crazy one too. She had the clue that was at the Grasso Tech on top of the hill.
Yep.
She's also a teacher at Grasso Tech on top of the hill. Mm-hmm. So she was, you know, she saw some of her students that day, and she's also the mayor. So she saw a lot of constituents that day, and people appreciated it. And the one thing I will say is people, you know, we thought we were kind of twisting their arms and like, "We need you to sit at this place for 2 hours. Everybody that went out and sat at a post, I've gotten remarks that it was one of the most fun things they've seen and done. because you're seeing people smiling, faces coming up, and you know they're having a good time.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, and as I was thinking that, you know, it wasn't just anyone you had at these spots. It was Mayor Grantowski. It was Representative Conley.
Yep. Liz Duar, who's a huge part of the Groton Democratic Party. I think we're going to have Bob Stach and Anthony Nolan next week. We're getting folks in that, again, and they these are people that would normally typically be knocking on doors already looking to meet voters. And it gives them a reason to be out and see people. You know, Bob Stach is in a situation because he is military and been called to full duty. He can't really campaign. So he's going to be at quite a disadvantage because he's not able to talk about it. But I have confidence that, the voters in this district are going to look and see who's best for them. And I think Bob's going to be that person. So, thanking him for his service at the same time because he's out there doing that heavy lifting that, you know, a lot of us are complaining about being home. He's doing a lot of the heavy lifting that none of us really want to do.
Yeah, and you got to respect, whichever side of the aisle you're on and whatever your political affiliation, you got to respect a guy who's got to suspend his campaign because he has to put the uniform back on and get to work for everyone. Whether you vote for him or not, you got to respect him.
There's no doubt, and I can tell you personally, Bob is more interested in his work right now and what he's doing to move us through this situation than getting elected. But that's who Bob is. And most people won't ever get to know. Nobody knows a politician that well. Except folks, friends and family. You can only know what you see on TV, and that's not always the person that it is in real life. And Bob, I can tell you. there's a lot to learn from somebody when you see them in public and how they act and what matters to them. But you don't really see the absolute persona. I feel like I wear my heart on my sleeve and I talk about things the same with no matter who I'm talking to. But there's certain things that you do differently that you don't do in front of a camera. And a lot of your interaction with politicians is, inherently by camera or in an interview. Yeah. So a lot of times the answers are thought out and guided and they're not in the heat of the moment. Like you are like at work, if me and you are joking around, things come out of my mouth a lot differently than they would if I'm in an interview with somebody.
Yep. Although I think it's one of the great things about you doing so many Facebook Lives, even before you were doing the nightly ones, is people really get a sense of whether they like you or not, whether they agree or not, they get a sense of who you are because you really can't. And frankly, you see that with President Trump too. He doesn't hide who he is. He's just like, I have a thought, boop, tweet it. I tend to think that your Facebook Lives are a bit more thoughtful than some of the president's tweets.
I said, I just compared to Trump. That's the word for me, but I actually know where you're coming from. It's good to hear. I don't love a lot of the things he says, but I don't think I mind hearing from a president as much. I think it's good. I want to define a person and know who they are. I tell people that all the time because in the end, it's not about what political party or team you're on. Talk to the person that you're going to be that's going to be representing you. I mean, I don't think people even understand the impact of when they vote for me. I'm in that building in Hartford making rules and laws that will directly affect all of my constituents. And I think it's critically important that people know who that person is. And that's why I say, don't read their flyer, go to one of their town halls. I don't care. Democrat, Republican, listen to them talk and then have them answer a question that means a lot to you. And if they answer it incorrectly, don't stop the door at there because that not everyone agrees with me with every issue. But if they're in 85% agreement with me, then I'm probably the person to vote for. If they disagree with me wholeheartedly, then I'm not the person. But I think it needs to be more than what we typically do in this country. And that is first and foremost, is it, are they D or R? And being a guy that knocked on doors, you go up and if you're a Democrat and they're Democrat, it's a great meeting and everyone loves you. And if they're a Republican, they might slam the door in your face. And it happens to Republican people when they go knock on doors. And really, the only person that, when you slam a door on a politician that's walking up and because you didn't want to engage because they were the opposite party of you, they could be a representative anyway. And you probably should have an idea of where they stand on issues because, believe it or not, you can because I'm a Democrat, when I really, really respect a lot of Republicans in this town that given me a lot of good advice. And I mean, Harry Watson comes to my mind every day. My political career was when I first got in, I was elected on a council with Harry, and he knew me from coaching. He knew me, he knew my son. And when I first got in there, he tells me all the time that I've developed into a very good politician. My former self, when I first got in, I was a little more nervous than I am today. And that comes with kind of knowing the territory. But I took a lot of advice from him. When he says something, when Harry talks to me about certain issues in town or statewide, I listen to him. And he is a Republican. And I do take that to heart, the things he says. And, you know, and for me to dismiss him because he had R in front of his name would be foolish. I mean, the guy did 28 years in government in a town. He knows a lot about the town.
Yeah, I think you also got that in local government. It's much more concrete. You know, national government is theoretical. It's numbers and statistics and concepts. In local government, it's like, where should that driveway be? Should it be here or shouldn't be there? Like a bulldozer is going to actually push dirt based on how a vote happens. And ideology doesn't mean nearly as much as you know, solving it. And that's fine. The RTM is, I've had knockdown, drag out fights with people in my party. I've gotten along well with people in the other party. Party is just kind of how you get in, and then
I think you find that at the local level. I found that very same thing too. But I will shock you, utterly shock you, that there's a lot more partisanship in Hartford than bipartisan agreement than not. If you look at the multitude of issues in general, a lot of the things are voted on in the 90 percentile. A lot of these bills, by the time they get hammered out and pushed through, it's, you know, and then you get to budgetary things and you'll get to programs where people will fight about, you know, should we put more in schools or less in schools, more in mental health, less in mental health. And you'll have people, you know, that have been affected on the other side of the party by drug addiction who are up there championing, you know, putting money into programs. And they could be Republican and the Democrats agreeing with them. And they come together and work this bill out and everyone signs onto it. And everyone said, well, that's in a perfect world. Well, it happens a lot up there. These bills.
Well, I think it's more human at this level too. Cause you represent what, like 30,000 people in your district.
They break it out by voters. I think it's, I want to say it's like 11,000 voters per district or something. Okay. But when you connect those voters to families, it ends up extrapolating out to 30,000.
But it's few enough that like if someone were to call your office, send you an email, whatever, you can get back to them.
It's
not like your senator represents 3.5 million people. And if you send, a federal senator an email, maybe he'll get back to you. Probably not. Maybe a staffer will get back to you. Maybe get a form letter.
Yeah.
But from a local person, like these are your neighbors. And I think a lot of people don't realize just how this is democracy. They can just call up Representative Joe and say, hey, I've got a question or I need some help. And it's much more hands-on if people are willing to reach out and connect in that way.
Well, I tell everyone to get involved in politics. I remember when I was on RTM, I kept thinking, man, I represent this whole neighborhood. You know, everyone in here that voted for me, trusted me to go in there and do the right thing with that pothole. And then I got to the council and I thought, wow, I can make changes to, I can vote on if we want to, you know, if we're going to change policies, if we're going to do, and that, you know, now all of a sudden there's 42,000 people in Groton, that, you know, enough of them got together and thought that I was the right person. And it's very humbling. And to me, everyone says, oh, you know, these politicians, they get involved because they like the power. I have never felt this power that everyone talks about. And maybe you get it as you go, or maybe I'll never have that feeling. because I, you know, and it's just, maybe that's my personality. I don't know. But when I go to Hartford, a lot of these people, you know, they think these guys are all, you know, I smoke cigars. So it's probably a bad analogy that people all smoking cigars and making all the big deals and they're all fat cats. It's your neighbors. I am a sheet metal worker full time. I worked 2,100 hours last year in my full time job. I go to work every day. So when I legislate things, I think about how they're going to affect me. And so does most of the legislature up there. Like, not more, but I think 50% are full-time workers. And then we have part-time, you know, retirees and, you know, and whatever else that have you. Some are full-time legislators up there, like the, you know, the Speaker of the House and stuff. But, you know, you got to remember that it is your neighbors. And in general, we're all trying to do the right thing. Am I on the complete polar opposite side of some of the folks up in Hartford? No doubt. Do I despise them and hate them? I don't. I think that every person's journey in life brought them to the place where they said, you know what, I feel like my ideas are so good, or I want to prevent someone else's ideas from happening, that I really feel compelled to run. It's a hard thing to do. You know, it's time consuming. I mean, when Chris Conley and I got elected together, we sat in the office, and when they gave us our schedules, and Chris Soto was one of us, we were freshmen together, we looked at the schedule and said, what do we do? I mean, Conley's like, I work 50 hours a week. And I'm like, so do I. What do we do? Like, what are we going to do with all this, all these meetings that we have to go, and then the pressure of learning everything, which again goes away a little bit because you realize this is a situation where you rely on your colleagues, and not all colleagues. And I don't rely on everyone that's in the Democratic Party. I look at some friends that are in the Republican Party and see and call them and say, what do you think about this? What don't you like about this bill? Why am I not going to like it? Or why am I going to like it? And I think it's important to have that conversation because there are a lot of bills. People say, you didn't read the whole bill? Well, there were 5,000 bills that were entered last year. It's a 3-month session. 5,000 bills that are intricate, that will affect people if they get passed. So, you know, if it's something that's in the health committee, I know the chair of the health committee, and I'll say, what do you think about this bill or that bill? And then I kind of have to take some of that overview and take that to heart. So that person has to know the bill inside and out. And I have to know that they explained it properly to me, because if I vote on it, you know, I got to be able to defend it. You know, that's because, you know, and that's what people don't realize. You can call your representatives out. If you see me at the store and say, you know, not for nothing, Mr. Dela Cruz, but not really sure where your head was with on this bill. I need to be able to defend my vote on that in particular bill. So I want to make sure I kind of understand it. But I'd be lying to say that I knew every single bill inside and out and would be able to quote statutes and lines out of it, because I think anyone that claims that would be lying anyway.
Yeah, and I think even if you could read every bill, you don't necessarily know the background. You know, you got a bill on health, then you got a bill on the environment, then you got a bill on food stamps, and then you got a bill on schools, and no one's an expert on everything that comes before you, even if you could magically know every piece of every legislation you were about to consider.
No, that's why I tell people, if they're out there considering, if you have listeners that listen to this and they're out there considering on running, I remember talking to Portia Bordelon when I met her. I loved her charisma. I just liked the person that she was. I knew she was passionate. I didn't really know exactly where she stood on all the issues, but I knew she had the passion, and I knew she was at home, weirdly enough, watching me when I was on the council. Which I didn't know anybody watch those meetings. But when I suggested she should run the first time, she said she didn't think she was ready. And to me, any person, you know, in this country, to me, is ready. I think that even when we think of young people and say, well, what do they know? They're 18 years old. Well, most of the people that signed the Declaration of Independence in our Constitution weren't much over 30. And a lot of them were in their late teens and early 20s. So if we could rely on them to write a document that established what we all call the best country on planet Earth, or at least the system that we think, I think that people shouldn't sell themselves short. If you're listening to this show, if you're anyone that's been considering it, I say put your hat in the ring, because you can make a difference. Yep. I mean, I have, and I was a sheet metal worker, and I started learning later on, and that's why I tell everyone, learn the person, because don't hold, you know, when I go to a debate and someone starts trying to grill me on the intricacies of a bill, you know, I might know the overview of it, and I can defend certain parts of it. But if I look like I stumbled on one bill, and I usually don't, I'm usually pretty good on those things, but don't hold someone to the fire on that one thing. Find out what kind of person they are. Find out how are they in the community? Are they looking out for the community? Are they looking out for a certain special interest? And when you get that person and you trust that person, that's the person you go for. Don't go for the D or the R. And because I think a lot of times we sell ourselves short with that, you know, and that's the truth. And, you know, and obviously I'm a Democrat and I'd be lying if I said I'm not pushing and working and for these Democrats. But the folks that when Bob went to go run, when people come to me and ask me that they're thinking about running, will I support them? Guess what I do? I go and I have a conversation. Bob Stach and I met for an hour and we talked and I wanted to find out where his head was. What does he think about working and unions? And, you know, I'm a union worker. And what does he think about things that matter to me that I know matter to my constituency? I asked. So when I told people this is the guy I want, I'm not saying it because Bob's a Democrat. I'm saying it because Bob's the guy I want. Bob would be my senator if he wins. And I think it's important for people to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's hugely important. And for the people who are just party all the way, that becomes, and you're seeing at the federal level, it becomes dangerous and divisive when your party comes before your country. That's that leads down a dark road.
Well, I think we all do it, and I'd be lying even as a Democrat when someone said, "Oh my God, Hillary Clinton did this," and the first thing you're trying to do is read it and see how you could possibly defend her or defend Obama or defend. And now I think, you know, folks that are Trump, you know, and the guy, he's the president of the United States. And if you voted for him, you voted for him for a reason, because you believed he was going to do a certain thing. So I think human nature will make you go in and at first defend the person you voted for and then let everything else leak out. And if he's completely wrong, hopefully that you have that, still have that, the courage, I would say, to say, you know what, the guy's wrong on this one or wrong on that one. And I hope that I would have had the courage to go up and stand up against Obama had he done things to me that are as outrageous as what the guy in the office is doing now. But again, I think I understand why you run right to it, because again, if you voted for someone, if you voted your confidence in someone to run the United States of America, this huge country with, you know, 350 million people, you know, you're not going to let a couple little bumps in the road turn you away from them. But I think now they've become not bumps, they've become mountains and potholes. And it's just not a good thing. But hopefully, you know, we get together and vet him for exactly his policies. Forget all the craziness and all the tweets and everything else. I think people need to look at policy. Don't worry about how they speak in front of a camera. Don't worry about how they act. It's what policies are they putting forth, and are those policies going to hurt you as an American worker, or are they going to help you? Or as an American, are they going to be good for your kids' health insurance? Or are they going to be bad for your kids' health insurance? And once we get down to that and rip it all down and stop looking at all the peripheral stuff, it becomes easier on who you should vote for. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And kind of, you know, look at a bigger picture and what's good for me, my family, what's good for America. And not just, you know, who waves the right, team donkey, team elephant, you know, you really want team America. And then, who's going to make that?
I think most Americans want that, but I think the you know, a lot in it, you know, the media and the Facebook, it gets in the way a lot of things.
Yes.
The algorithms, you know, if most people don't know this, but if you keep pulling up all Democratic stuff, you'll see all Democratic stuff. If you're pulling up all, and then when the bots get involved and they want to make you mad, they'll start feeding you stuff that makes you really mad against the other side. It's horrific that it's happening. I think you mentioned early on how important local media is. And I continue to shout out the day paper because, you know, without the day paper, how do we know where the food banks are? You think they're going to announce the food bank in Groton, Connecticut, in the USA Today or the Wall Street Journal? Those things won't happen. And if you're going to get media that's local, we need to know that's been vetted. And that's what the day does. Their reporters, they don't just they come and ask me what happened, but then they go and ask the other guy what happened, because that's what reporters do. And then they mix the story and blend it, and they do a wonderful job of doing it. Everyone's not always happy with them, but I think everyone can agree they are the best source of news, local news, for this area. I mean, hands down. Yeah. There's no other news source that I would trust more. Especially, I mean, Norwich Bulletin if you're in Norwich, but down here in New London, New London Day. If I need to know something or find something out and it needs to be factual, something that I can share, if I read it in a day, I share it as if it's the truth a lot of times. Yep. I mean, I'm not saying every single story or opinion, but the ones that like Karen Florin wrote, that's something that I'll trust. And I know Paul Chenier and the whole team up there, they read over it and they want to make sure that it's factual. And that's people, the scary part is regular working people don't have time to vet news. And that's why the newspapers are so important. And hopefully people keep supporting them. And I just wanted to address, you know, we talked off air about how government is run, because I think a lot of people are getting nervous that it's starting to look like we have a king in Hartford, because he is making a ton of decisions. And, you know, normally, typically, the legislature would have had a lot to say about when a business closes or opens or doesn't or does. And, you know, he's taking a lot of weight, but he is reaching out to the legislature like normal, and we do have a lot of input.
So he's not just running off by himself saying, here's what I'm doing. Ha-ha, you can't meet, so I'm doing what I want.
I think people get the impression that he's doing what he's want. I mean, again, one really tough was, you know, people were expecting to get their hair cut today, and he held that off, and he's just going by what the science that he's hearing from the scientists. But also, and what people don't realize is how powerful your voice is. I have to delete emails. I had so many emails from hairdressers, salons, stylists that were completely, nervous. They had anxiety about going back to work on Wednesday. They think that they need more time because they don't think it's safe enough for them. So the governor has to take those kind of opinions and thoughts and put them into legislation and policy. And I'm not sure. Do I agree with them bumping it up? I think the haircut thing to me is on the level of someone waiting tables. So I probably would have let him open. But, you know, I'm not in the room with all the scientists like he is each and every day. And, man, if anything, through this, the guy had my vote, and I campaigned for him. But through this whole pandemic, I can tell you there's not another person I could think that I'd want at the head of the table.
Good. Yeah. Good. And it's good to have an idea of what's going on there. Well, so speaking of time, we are towards the end of ours. But I really appreciate all your insights and all your, thoughts there. Is there any quick closing remark you want to leave our listeners with?
I want to thank you for having me on. But I also want to say that one of the most moving Facebook posts I've seen all year was the one that you wrote about Groton becoming your home. And it has something to do with the scavenger hunt we put on. But I thought it was very nice to have outside eyes looking at a town that I've loved my whole life, Groton in New London. And sometimes I think I'm blind to the rest of the world, because some people say how awful it is and they love this state or that state better or this place better. To have someone like you come in and write what you wrote on your Facebook saying that you've rediscovered where you live. Home is where you hang your hat and what you make of it. But for you to kind of validate what I felt my whole life, and that one nice, really well-written Facebook post, I appreciated reading it, and I was happy to see you have become at home here in Groton with us.
Yes, thank you. Well, and thank you for being a part of that and making it feel like home. I appreciate that.
Yep.
And thank you for coming on the show. We're on a little bit longer than usual, but I think it's worth it. So thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
All right, Mike. Thanks. Have a good night.
Thank you. I had so much fun talking to Joe. We actually ended up chatting for another half hour after the recording ended. My wife joked with me that if we ever went over to their house for a quick visit, she'd become great friends with Joe's wife because they'd have plenty of time to bond. In addition to this podcast, I'm also the publisher of Mystic Neighbors and Niantic Neighbors, produced by Best Version Media. Just like I do with my network, Mystic Neighbors and Niantic Neighbors bring people together with their local community. Every month, a high-quality, full-color, glossy publication arrives in thousands of mailboxes. Everyone reads it because we feature one of their neighbors in the cover, with a really fun article about them accompanied by a fantastic photo shoot. It's nothing but good news, positive content, and ways to connect with and enjoy your community. Something very much appreciated in these times. An unprecedented 89.4% of people who receive our magazines engage with them. If your business is looking to build brand awareness among the affluent and desirable homeowners in Mystic and Niantic, then you owe it to your business to talk to me about Mystic and Niantic Neighbors. Email me at michael@guywhoknowsaguy.com. You'll be glad you did. And if your business is not in the Southeast Connecticut area, Best Version Media has over 900 publications across the United States and Canada. So email me as well, because I can probably connect you with someone who can really help you out. The Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast is produced and hosted by me, Michael Whitehouse. Our theme song is composed by Patrick Howard of Four Unicorns Design. That nifty sound effect is from Benjamin Harvey Design by way of freesound.org. Special thanks to Pat Helmers of Habanero Media for all the great advice he gave me on relaunching the show.
Find me on the web at www.guywhoknowsaguy.com. And please subscribe to this podcast on whatever podcast app you're using and leave a review, because that helps people find us. You can also follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/theguywhoknowsaguy. Please share links to this show with friends that you think would benefit. This is Michael Whitehouse, the guy who knows a guy, reminding you that it's not what you know, it's who you know, and how much you're willing to help them. JV Connect is coming up quick, December 12th and 13th. If you are looking for a networking event where you can meet people who aren't looking to just pitch you or take, but actually want to collaborate, build strategic partnerships, joint ventures, maybe even find some mentors, some coaches, people to support you, accountability partners, who knows? If you're looking for good people in an environment that's not stressful, but is set up to give you a lot of great connections in an efficient amount of time, check out JV Connect. jv-connect.com. That's jv-connect.com. December 12th and 13th, 2023. We'll see you there.